I'm Joanne Holt, and we're going to be dealing with fitness and sport for better or for worse today. If any of you have been at the previous two that dealt with fitness on either children or on the whole area of sport and fitness, it will be somewhat the same. How many of you attended the discussion on women the other day? Ah, good. Because some of what I have to say really deals in that area, although not directly. Rarely does one start a discussion putting the trump card on the table. But my trump card's going on the table because you see my t-shirt, which tells you whether I believe it is for better or for worse. Sports light up my life. That's one of our themes for today. And our second theme for today, since I don't usually use audiovisual, but this was the nearest I could get, is hold the line on Title IX. Those of you that were at my discussion the other day know that that deals with equality in education and in all forms of education. But because sport is so terribly important to our world, and again, for better or for worse, it became the central concern for the Act. What the Act says, which is an Act of Congress called Title IX, has to do with equity in all areas of education, but particularly it began to matter in physical education, which moved to co-education on all levels, meaning, as far as I am concerned, that the teachers must teach better by ability grouping instead of by automatic boy-girl grouping and just tossing the ball out. As a matter of fact, it was getting bad in some of our areas in which the physical educators were not throwing the ball out, but were making them come and get them as well. And so I think Title IX has been a very positive for that. But it also deals with high-level sport, which I call athletics, which is kind of the highest level of performance. I believe in athletics, but I also believe that we have misused athletics and that it has affected you and it has affected me and it certainly has affected your children. And that's one of my questions, therefore, of for worse rather than for better in terms of the whole sports world. And in fact, my third thought then, besides dealing with equality and theme, is that what we need to deal with a little bit is the area of new games. And the idea there is a cooperative venture versus a competitive venture in play, in games, in sport, and even in athletics. Although on the upper levels, the new games concept simply does not work on the intercollegiate, interscholastic level, because that's a whole area which is in fact competitive in spite of also being cooperative. And so we need to discuss that a little bit today. My references for today come primarily out of three books: Aerobics for Women, and some of you may recognize that there is also a new aerobics book and an aerobics book for men. It is written by the Coopers. This one happens to be in the bookstore. And it's a great book that deals really with exercise programs, play, sport, and games, primarily in this book for women and in the rest of the books that deal with it for men, too. The other one is not in the bookstore, or one of them, Every Kid Can Win. And if any of you have young children or are doing any coaching or you're dealing at all with youth and sport, you might be interested in at least looking at this sometime in the next couple of days. What it's trying to deal with is really the idea of new games in some ways, and that is that children are not necessarily in love with highly competitive athletics, and that in fact it may be the parents who are in love with it rather than the kids, that they like their own variety of game, that they learn to cooperate, they learn values of their own. And so the central focus of the book is teaching children to enjoy sport, become highly skilled in it, but as a game and as play, as opposed to a highly structured one. It comes out of Canada, actually, and some originally from England. And their concept of sport and the amateur is probably a little more wholesome than ours. The third, the New Games book, is a book that deals with the whole New Games series. It has a great introduction and some pages that deal with what they're trying to do in the area of sport. Have any of you read The Ultimate Athlete by Leonard? Some of you might be interested in reading the book. It deals with how every individual can, in his or her head, be an athlete as a jogger, as a walker, almost an internal kind of thought rather than an external kind of thought. And that you decide what your ultimate goal is in play and in sport. And they talk about that a little bit in the New Games book. But it also has a very practical kind of help for you for family games. In any of your family reunions or even your small gatherings, you can use some of these new games, and you can play them with young children as well as us older kids. It's a great kind of a book. Also, if you work in the church with youth or any place with youth, you can use these games. We were going to use them here Christmas, July, but we had a little rain interference and couldn't get to them. But I think those give you kind of a broad spectrum of kinds of things that are happening in sport and what my emphasis is. The other book that I use for a reference is a book that the teaching staff has been reading The Compassion. Anyway, it's by Matthew Fox. Spirituality named Compassion. It's already packed. But it's an excellent book, both dealing with sexuality for those that listen to the women's discussion, and in the area of competition versus compassion. It has page 68 to 74, really deals with it and deals with it well. And it's really the idea of the new games concept for children and what it has done in the adult world. And the importance of a better attitude as we deal in the sports world. And so I thought we could discuss some of these issues. In the meantime, there are several kinds of problems that we deal with in the area of fitness. I'm interested in the area of fitness primarily because I think it is kind of a preliminary to abundant living, and it certainly deals in the whole world of holistic kind of preventative medicine. It is, as I see it, one of the best preventative medicines if you use it as a way of life and not as a stress factor. If you must compulsively go out and run, or you must get your exercise, you may be creating more stress. And that's where the for better or for worse comes in as you're dealing with fitness. But as a way of life, fitness, I guarantee you, enhances living. It enhances your ability to serve others, to serve your children, to serve one another, and to live a more abundant life. There are several kinds of studies which demonstrate what happens as health and fitness move to a lower round, more mental kinds of illnesses are possible. And that general fatigue under a stress also leads to kinds of mental illness, although temporary in nature. And so that exercise, for example, is being used in mental institutions and in even psychiatric wards where they're only in for 2 to 5 weeks. They are trying to develop programs that would deal in this area. And the reason I see fitness as so terribly important, there are several reasons, and I have used these before, but we are, in fact, eating ourselves to death, and I'll be talking about each one of these. We're sitting ourselves to death. And remember, we were made for organic action. That's the nature of us, as well as of the lower animals. And by our technological advances, we are able to prevent ourselves moving. This is one of the reasons that as the men move to the marketplace, and the women stayed at home, the death rate of the male went up so very quickly with heart diseases and all of the kinds of stress that occurs. As women are moving into the marketplace with our equality, unfortunately, we're also gaining equality in early deaths, a demonstration of what happens when we move out into the marketplace. Also, the women are beginning to have more kinds of trinkets that help us in our wash, not having to iron, all the kinds of things that forced us into movement. Now, I'm not at all willing to go back to that life, at all. It's much more fun to be fit through exercise and play and games, as I see it, than it is to do this through the past world. But the farm wife has survived a lot longer than her husband who moved into the city and into the urban world. We're also finding as soon as you move into the urban world, your chances of death are greater, sooner, which obviously demonstrates that the stress factor is important. And so the next problem is that we are worrying ourselves to death. We have found more things to worry about now than they ever did in the past. And we have a lot of worries when you look at our nation and the individual family kinds of crises that you have. But exercise, fitness, play, leisure is all one, just one of the ways. You will not alleviate your worry by playing volleyball. You may be merely putting it off for a half an hour. But while you're putting it off, it may be an important time for you then to be able to make greater decisions. Now, one of the four worst of sport, however, is that what we really do is create stress rather than alleviating stress. And I know that I do that myself out in that volleyball court, that I'm creating stress for some people as I am demanding a level of excellence. And that, no question in my life, is left from my own competitive spirit, which ought not to be felt in an environment in which you are trying to play. But remember that stress can be caused by sport as well as alleviated. And therefore that you need to look at your attitudes towards sport and play. But we definitely, by our death rate, know that we are worrying ourselves to death. The next problem is that we are doping ourselves to death. And we are doping ourselves to death primarily through sleeping pills, wake-up pills, uppers, downers, tranquilizers of all variety. And it is not that I don't believe that they have a function, but they don't have a continuous function for always and ever. If we are dependent upon barbiturates for our entire lives, then we need to look into ourselves and deal with those kinds of happenings. Aspirin could be the same thing, except we have found, of course, in the arthritic cases that they are really a necessity to help us to be able to move, that we can have life and have it more abundantly. Arthritis is about the number one kind of illness in which aspirin is not really a dope in the sense of its importance for the inflammation, or also an injury that aspirin can help in dealing with inflammations and that sort of happening. But there's all kinds of others that would be happening. The next thing that's happening is that we are drinking ourselves to death. Again, equality in a negative sense have entered the world of women. There are proportionately more women turning into alcoholics than are adult men from the 21 age category on. Either that or they are admitting it. And of course we don't know which in trying to deal in the holistic. But what it does show is that stress causes drink, drink causes alcoholism. Even if you have our predetermined possibility to be an alcoholic, you cannot be if you do not drink. That we know for absolutely sure, that if you do not drink, you can't possibly be an alcoholic. But drinking is one of the ways in which we are taking our lives and taking a way of life in which death can be more certain for us. And finally, in that whole area, we are hurrying ourselves to death, which may be a part of the worrying ourselves to death in the whole process of what is happening to us. And so I see in the whole picture that the possibility for us then is a fitness kind of program and a play kind of program, which can help us in dealing with this and help in the various parts of the area. Any general questions before we talk about each one of these, and particularly looking at children first? I might say in starting that aerobics is really the word that we are now using to deal in the whole area of fitness. Is there anybody that hasn't heard the word? Anybody want to define it for me? I can't specifically, but what's your general idea of what in the world aerobics are? And the whole idea is that your pulse rate will go up past and to, say, 120 and beyond, but it's how quickly you can recover from that. And the problem with a lack of fitness is that fatigue sets in and you do not recover from exercise. All of which means, in terms of abundant living, is that you simply can't do as much and fatigue sets in. So even your play life is affected by not having a fit body. But a fit body in the long run has to do with longevity. Now, it does not mean that you aren't going to have heart attacks. We know that. As a matter of fact, one of my favorite professors died on a treadmill, but 78 years old. And going beyond, they think, his 80% capacity. But what it does is help in redeveloping health after an illness, and it is a process that each individual needs to work with. That's one of the values of the Aerobics for Women book. They finally have not said you need the same amount of points, which is, say, 30 a week, in order for women to be fit. And the reason that women can be fit with fewer numbers of points is because we don't bring as much weight, we don't bring as much muscle to our activities. What do we bring, women? More fat. And that is not our fault. That is nature, who has created us with adipose fat tissue after adolescence or during adolescence, having to do with our hormones. That the female secretes hormones which encourage adipose fat tissue as opposed to muscle. Male hormones secrete for muscle. So on the average, the male has almost twice as much muscle that he can work with than the female. This does not mean, however, that the female cannot reach a high, high level of fitness, a high level of endurance, flexibility, and strength, the three component parts of exercise programs. In fact, women may work to the point of having less adipose fat than do the non-trained male in our society. So it is not that we cannot reach a high level of fitness, but the fitness is judged by the individual as opposed to the rest of the population. So that's what's important about a kind of pattern that moves. For any of you that have heard of it, any of you been dealing with aerobic dance? Aerobic dance for both males and females is one of the most exciting new kinds of activities that you might want to participate in it. The value of it is that it's nothing more than group exercise to music. But the kinds of music that at least our youth love and that is exciting kinds of movement. I went hiking 2 weeks ago with a woman that is not a hiker, someplace in my age category, and we went running up a mountain, not running, going in my step patterns, but like a mountain goat, she ended up at the top of the ridge at the same time that I ended at the top of the ridge. See the recovery rate. Some of you who get colds can see a quick recovery when generally a cold is supposed to, you know, take its course of a week. And any other kinds of illnesses, even those who have been quite in a hospital for a long length of time if they were fit when they went in. Their chances both of survival and of living a more normal life occurs. The same happens with the heart attack individual. And that, in fact, the heart attack individual sometimes lives longer because they're more careful with their bodies and how much they do or they don't do, and live for a long time. They get rid of a lot of the stress, for one thing, in the whole process. Okay, so that I see aerobics as terribly significant. And within that is the endurance, which is the cardiovascular. Then flexibility. Flexibility is kind of an interesting happening. You do not need more than a normal range in your body. As I mentioned the other day, all of us can live the rest of our lives without being able to do back bends, touching our toes all the way, our hands flat on the floor, all of those kinds of what I call showy ways of flexibility. In fact, our government gave to physical education, the national organization, a grant several years ago because there had been a study called the Cross-River Study, which was really developed for hospital patients to show their flexibility. And by the way, you can gain flexibility in anywhere from 3 to 5 weeks. You also lose it in 3 to 5 weeks. And so it has to be a continuous process. But what somebody needed, a study in physiology, and so they went to Europe, tested the Swedish children and the English children on this flexibility test called the Cross-River, came back and did it to the Americans. Well, obviously, from the life of both the Swedes and the English children, they were much higher. And so the whole physical fitness programs that your children may be a part of, in which they test them at the beginning, they get stiff, they test them at the end, and maybe give them something in between, was a result of this Cross-River test. But all it really tested was flexibility. And flexibility by itself does not make a fit person. That I am double-jointed, or even that I can do and go to there, absolutely does not make me a fit person. It means that I happen to have long hamstring muscles, not that I am fit. Now, it so happens, doing that quickly, I better be fit, however, in flexibility to have done it. But that does not ultimately say what fitness is. So be careful on the kinds of flexibility exercises that you do, that you do not bounce. You don't bounce down. That kind is stretching the back, perhaps beyond. You also do not bring yourself beyond the normal straight of your body on sit-ups, for example, because that is beyond the normal range of flexibility needs. Also, flexibility is specific to whatever part of the body you want to be flexible. So you're not just not flexible. You may not be flexible in your hip joint. Many women are not. We seem to have a special pad there that obviously we can't get as much movement in. You may be not flexible in your arm and shoulder girdle. What happens to what they call double-jointed people? Any double-jointed people, they call that, which is really that you can stretch beyond the normal range. It means your shoulder goes out a lot, your thumbs go out, and it really is not a positive in your lives. And so flexibility is not as needful. The third is strength, and strength is significant for all of us, and it is one of the areas, by the way, in which women, even under a great deal of training, are not able to reach the capacity that the average male can in the upper body. And it has to do with our pectoralis major, which are the muscles in here that are different, which makes our arm and shoulder girdle different, particularly if you did not use them as a child. And that's one of the important things for your children, that in the first place, women, if you throw like a girl, which is here, do not teach your girl how to throw. Let your husband teach your girl how to throw, because throwing is imitative. Now, it doesn't mean that, women, that you do not throw. You just don't throw as the one that you want her to imitate, because so many do not throw correctly. And we know that this is true by a study that came out of California, which was a sixth grade boys whose fathers all happened to be in the Second World War at the time the boys were 3 to 7. this is what they figured out later, all but one of them. And so what was happening was a woman was teaching those boys how to throw. And they were, in the stereotype, throwing like a girl. So I beg you to be sure that they have a right to learn to throw, but be careful of your throwing. Also, women by chance throw this way, with wrong foot forward. And I even have some physical education students that don't even notice it, particularly girls, because they've been throwing that way. So be sure that as you're teaching them, they're throwing in opposition. A very common thing that men do by imitation. And little girls have not been socialized to care, to pay enough attention to it. And so it's important. But anyway, in the strength factor, the males and the females do not achieve the same, even with weightlifting. But on our legs, women's legs are very strong. So you have really little excuse to say, somebody else should lift something 30 pounds because I can't. You can develop your leg muscles, and that's what ought to be used in lifting. You do it with your children, you lift 30 pounds all the time, 25 pounds. And that's the problem that of leg strength. And you don't do it by bending this way and picking up something. That will pull on the back. It'll put on the men's back and on the women's back. But you use your legs and down here. And we can develop strength without, by the way, for those of you who are fearful of masculine physiques for women, you can create 5% bulk in the sense of there will be a definite greater line. For example, in our shoulders, there's no question that I have a greater line than is found in most females. But that's also 25 years of serving in tennis. And one would think a man who has served that long bulk, who is serving continuously, is much greater. So don't worry about your girls becoming, as it were, jock, quote, unquote, looking, because it simply doesn't happen in the whole strength. But those are the kind of areas that you need to consider in the world of exercise. Any general questions now on strength, flexibility, any of those, or comments? Testimonies?
There's an interesting article I saw on television that brought out that after a 15-mile point in racing, the women become just about equal in endurance to men, and beyond that, there have been 100-mile races where women have won them because they have the endurance and the fat layer to carry them further.
Yeah, that's correct. In fact, in California, one of the 100-mile runs was won by a woman, and the English Channel was really the best time on the English Channel is a woman, and it really helps in swimming because our center of gravity is a little lower on the average. So consequently, our balance is better, and our floating, besides the fat, is better. And so that it's less work for a woman swimmer than it is for a male. And of all the sports, it is in swimming that women are the nearest to reaching the same potential as the males. In fact, there were 5 women in the 1960s that participated in the 1976 Olympics who had better time in swimming than 5 gold medal winners in the 68 Olympics for men. So, and that's not a very long time ago. Now there's all of the activities in which women have surpassed the 1928 mark of men, but that's a long time ago and took a long time to progress. But we're within 5% of the male, and it does have to do with our adipose tissue, and that endurance can be built just mile after mile in all of the various runs. So in the marathons, we still are not close. But in the 100-mile runs, we are much closer. Also, by the way, if we end up on a mountaintop together, a male and a female, the female can survive the cold much longer than the male. But if we're running on a hot, hot day, then the male sweat glands are more profuse and the volume of blood travels more quickly, and he can survive the heat greater and better than a female. And that's one of the problems in years past. You put all those clothes on those women, and then you put them out in the heat, and it's no wonder that they don't quite survive in the total picture. The other thing, by the way, that is different between males and females, while we're on that subject, for highly trained female athletes, and this includes if any of you have track women, for example, or basketball players, or field hockey is a really very vigorous kind of sport. The one thing that we have found is a deficiency in iron of almost all highly trained female athletes. And it has to do with our initial hemoglobin count, but the loss of iron through the menstrual cycle. And so consequently, if any of you are training female athletes, they were finding that right at the peak of their season, fatigue was setting in, and so they thought they were overtraining them. But it really has to do with the iron deficiency, and iron deficiencies cannot be stored. You can't store up the iron. And so what they do at the universities, because of course we can't give dope, we can't give medicine, is that they have a supply of iron, and if you women would like the iron, if you take it 3 weeks before the training period, stop, then into the center of your training time, take it again for 3 weeks. It happens to be over there in the corner, which means they can't give it, but that they are finding it as a universal. And that's the only thing that they're finding different in the whole training process of the male and the female, is the iron deficiency. And that physiologically, the limits of the female simply hasn't been reached. The other negative, however, that has occurred in adult women is because they were not trained from childhood, the muscles connecting with the bones and the bone structure is perhaps not as strong, and so as you increase your muscle mass for females, they're getting hairline fractures and shin bone, shin splints much more than the male. But the heavy injury rate has not occurred yet, but they are afraid that it may in the high school and college group very soon, because those girls still do not have vigorous activity. But in skeletons of some of the primitive societies in which the women were very active, they cannot tell the difference in some of the skeletons between the male and the female in terms of the body, which may mean ultimately that the way the American society women have not used their bodies is found in more differences than fewer differences that occur in the process. Okay, any questions? Oh, but it does. That's another thing I should have probably mentioned, that in most highly skilled athletes that the menstrual cycle does stop for the length of the training period. What they have found, however, is that it does not affect pregnancy. It does not seem to affect the system at all. But there is something, and one of the physiologists at the University of California at Santa Barbara is working on the why, and I don't know the why. But we do know, by the way, that it is happening in almost all of the highly skilled athletes. The other thing that they're trying to do with them is not to have them take birth control pills. That the birth control pills are not a way to equalize the menstrual and to determine what day. Because there is such a thing as premenstrual stress, which is affecting some of the time. Not during the menstrual cycle, by the way. Lots of gold medals during it. But that there's a premenstrual. But if any of your women are really great athletes, they may, or being trained, they may have the stop of the menstrual cycle. Also, by the way, you people may have it hiking even up to Holden Lake. It may change your menstrual cycle or stop it for 2 months. So you're not pregnant. It's just the change. You can all go home. But it's just the change and the strenuous activity that will do that. Strenuous activity, by the way, can also be a positive for dysmenorrhea in terms of women. It can also help in birth control. I mean in birth, it may help in birth control too. After all, that's what the Greeks said about men. You may not participate in sex the night before the Olympics, because obviously that's going to sap your strength. And that folklore or myth has survived to most of our football teams, you know. They go off separately the night before a big event. And some of our studies show that that's still a myth that men are living with. So it's not an unusual sort of happening either. Any other questions in that area? If not, I'd like to talk about children for a minute and then get back to our adult world. And why I want to talk about children for a minute is in the whole area, not of exercise so much, but the area of what happens to kids with our highly competitive athletic programs that we are permitting within our society. And how many of us would say to the boy, or the boy think, well, I'm never ever going to read again? Would that be a possibility in our educational system to say, well, you don't have to read ever again? What happens to our fat little second grade boy who can't run as fast as the rest of the kids? What happens to him in our school system or in our little league system or in our bitty basketball system?
Okay.
He thinks that he can't run. And why is it so important that a little boy can run when lots of people don't care if the little girl can't run? I mean, after all, she's a delicate, cute thing if she can't run. What's the big deal in our society about the little boy who can't run, can't throw the ball as well? Why does our society care? Why is that such a big thing? Is it a big thing in the minds of our average Joe Blow? Yeah, why is it? Okay, the whole problem of what makes the man and the masculinity concept. Unfortunately, we've connected it with sport. And it's really unfortunate for a lot of the people who are fighting for equality in sport, is because that's the last stronghold of what is male. To have children and to participate in sport. So obviously that little second grade boy has something wrong with him. He's not quite whole as a male. So obviously that little second grade boy has something wrong with him. He's not quite whole as a male. And he begins to feel it immediately. He is not allowed to cry when he falls. He is not allowed to only throw the ball the same distance as the girl. And so it's more than that he can't read, because every kid, every parent, everybody can see it happening. And so one of the worst things that we are doing for kids is trying to force them into an adult competitive mold. And even in physical education, we have not been good at helping the second grade child that cannot throw. What we are learning is that every child, even handicapped ones, can learn to participate in a sport and to participate better. But he can't if he thinks he can't. And that's what we're doing with Little League. He wants to stay home from it. He wants to stay away from it. Or he will go into some other kind of area. And so a whole area of his life is impoverished by what we do to kids in the sports world. And so our first task, it seems to me, is that your own children, the number one thing is not that they are highly skilled, but that they participate. And it's the participation and the patience to train. Now, I know that little boys often don't want to learn from their fathers, and you may have to send them someplace else for learning, but that they really need to learn a variety of activities so that they then can pick. And it's particularly important for the 9 through 12-year-old child, because that is the very best time for teaching any sport to anybody. All of us would have been better off learning tennis, learning basketball, learning racquetball, any of the sports from 9 through 12. They have reached their coordination. They can grasp concepts. They can move their bodies in any kind of direction. And you can teach them the most complicated of skills from 9 through 12. And that's the time that we're beginning to think, oh, let's have 50 kids in a physical education class. It doesn't matter. And if Johnny isn't so good, Johnny doesn't touch the ball. We've got some work that we're doing in some of the Maryland public elementary schools in which we're finding that, say, 30% of the girls never touch a ball in a game, and about 18% of the boys. And those are the 18% that need to touch the ball the most often, because that's how you learn it. Correcting skills is really how you learn it. You learn it by doing it. And that's one of the things that the 9 through 12-year-old kid will work and work and work on. That's why blacks are not by nature great basketball players. What have they done, even in the inner city, since they were six? Played bucket ball, what they call jungle basketball. And not only that, but our society has said, that's the only way you're going to get out of the gutter. That's the only way you're going to get out of the ghetto either, is basketball. And we've probably done more harm to our society by basketball for blacks than almost anything else that we have done. Because what we have done is given an image of only physical skill that they can do. And if those same blacks had spent as much time learning to read, to write, to think, to believe that they could do something else, we would have a whole generation of black boys that could do that. But as our society has grown, we've slotted them in to basketball. And that's why over 60%, in spite of only 11% of the population being black, 60% of our pro, or 70 almost now, basketball players are blacks. How about lead coaches, while we're on the racial issue? Yeah, something like 4%. Russell is the first one you can name in the basketball world. Head coaches in a Division I basketball school. Got any blacks? Yeah. That was one of the first ones. University of Minnesota is dealing with one, but mostly what you find is the assistant coach and a lot of the Division II schools. We now have one at George. Yeah, right. And he is probably the first one in a successful basketball program. Georgetown has one, and they are now a Division I school in spite of getting beaten by James Madison College, which you had never heard of. Crushes me. I'm from Washington, D.C., in the process. But it demonstrates what we've done to a group of people. And multiply that, what we've done to all of the youth of our society. And not only have we interfered with what I call their natural play instincts, but we have also given a generation of boys the idea that cheating is okay. If you're not caught, that's really what the Spartans taught centuries ago. But think of your boys watching a football game. What do you see on the TV? What are some of the illegal things you see going on in a football game, even on TV? Or ice hockey's a really great one. Okay, now clipping often is not purposeful. What's a really nice purposeful one? Holding and pulling the face mask. And you see redos all the time of pulling the face mask. And if you're not sitting right there and say, Johnny, that really is not a good idea. We don't want this done. But then the coach over there on the junior high is saying, well, no, you really ought not to do that, but. And so I think the whole idea that we're building positive character in sport, you need to examine with your own children and in your own school systems. And what's the whole basic cause of all of that? Win at all costs. Who is it? Vince Lombardi that was supposed to have said winning isn't everything, it's the only thing. Now he claims he didn't say it, but it makes a good statement. And so you see what is happening in the whole sports world. How does that come about? Why is that happening in the sports world? Is it only happening in the sports world? Yeah, it's the economics, it's the competitive system. And that's what Fox is saying in his book, is that we have no compassion in sport because we have no compassion in society. And it really is a microcosm. And that's why I see sport as so positive, where you really could be teaching cooperation and just the enjoyment of movement and showing the difficulties of injury, purposeful kinds of injuries. And there are several books out on football that deal in that whole area. We have several historians that are trying to deal with this whole issue of violence in sport. And what we're finding is really a microcosm of what's happening in our society when you start looking at the rapes, the deaths, the killings, and that sport theoretically is supposed to be a safety valve. Well, the sociologists are now telling us it is no safety valve. It is a safety valve for the participant, that he or she really is having a lethargical kind of happening that may keep them out of violence, but that the spectators are becoming more violent, and you can even see it in the parking lot on who's going to get out first. And that therefore our society needs to worry about it, and sport can be a negative for our children. But above all, I think, is the whole problem of making sure that we teach our children to play and to enjoy play and to teach them some kinds of activities that they can carry over forever. Just think, if you people, how many of you learned tennis as a child? Hardly any. How many of you had to learn it later? Easy? Nice 3-month course? No. That's one of the reasons I really have trouble teaching tennis, is I can't see the great results. I teach badminton, and I can teach all of you who can move at all to play pretty good badminton in 6 weeks, twice a week, if you can move at all or you're interested in it. And it's a great game. Racquetball is another one.
Pickleball.
What?
Pickleball.
Oh yeah, somebody else mentioned pickleball. You want to tell them what it is?
It's, you play it with children.
Yeah, and that's, one of those is in the new games kind of book. What other sports could you have learned or are your children being exposed to?
Swimming.
Okay, swimming, all areas of swimming.
Soccer.
Soccer is a great game for your kids. Not only for the exercise, but who knows whether they're succeeding or not?
Nobody.
Nobody. And that's what's great about it, except the goalie. And the one who chooses to be goalie probably has a pretty good ego. And so they can tolerate the goals that are coming in. So you have 10 people that are not up like baseball. Baseball is the world's worst. There you are, just you and a little prayer. You know, waiting, and a strikeout. Watch little kids on a strikeout. I'm not very sensitive on a lot of issues, but to see a little boy that has struck out and a father up there in the stands screaming at this 10-year-old boy, it is one of the most heart-rending kind of happening, and I think, why am I in this field? You know, what have I done in terms of our children? And so in the organized sports world of athletics for children, I think the important thing is that they're kids. And that's what they're supposed to be there for, their own fun. If you leave them alone, by the way, they will play. If we just put those bats and balls out there and go home, I'd really like everybody to go home when the kids are playing. I had a man last week who wasn't at all willing to go home for the Little League. But I found out afterwards his son asked him to go. And I think that's significant to the whole issue. And he also went to their spelling bees, to their plays, just being interested in their activity. But I've seen mothers and fathers that are only wanting a win. Even when my nephew came home from tennis, finally talked him into tennis, he's in a tennis tournament. Do I say, how'd you play, David? No, I say, did you win? And he put me to my level by saying, no, Auntie Jo, but I really played well. And with that, I was ready to crawl into my corner. But that's what we tend to do, is so that the winning syndrome with kids, we need to be careful with making sure that they learn an activity and find something that they can do. You don't try to convince a boy of parents who are 5 feet that he's going to be a great center basketball player. Keep practicing. you find the sports that he can do. And the whole new cross culture is important in our freedom for kids to play. Because boys can do dance now, and we can encourage them in modern dance. Girls can wrestle if they want to. Now, there are not a lot of girls that want to, but if they want to, if they want to play tag football. I am for all cross-sex sports. That any sport, any activity that you want to participate in, go to it. And I think that's a significant kind of happening. And that in the competitive world, we need to be careful in terms of our children's activity. Any comments or questions on the children? The other thing, by the way, is role modeling. Even those of you, particularly women, who don't participate in sport, well, you pretend that you do. And pretend that you like it. Because I think that's the beginning of doing it. That they really see it. And it's important for boys as well as girls to see it. Because the boys are the ones who's going to be having the girlfriends and either encourage her in sport or not. That it starts right there. That nobody or everybody is a cheerleader and everybody is a quarterback. A great deal in the Midwest. It was in California, and now it's gone. Movement education is teaching the basic activities, but not the competitive sports. The problem with that is that we didn't know how to teach that very well, and that the new games is really a better substitute. And then trying to get sixth grade boys to love it when they haven't had it when they're young. Movement education is sort of... I call it almost a pretend kind of activity. The value of it is learning about your own body, though, and what your body is able to do. And that's what's important both for men and for women, is the self-esteem that can come from liking your body. After all, you're not going to get another one. That's it. I think it's great activity for particularly grades 1 through 3 for learning about space. And what they can do is be anything they want. Like one day they can be a tree, an animal, and then that they learn what can you do on 1 foot? What can you do with this ball? And a freedom to be creative is another activity, which we have absolutely taken out of sport, is any kind of creativity because we want them to imitate. It's easier to get the whole group to imitate us in the process, and I think that that happens in
sports.
Oh, not at all. In fact, I'm...
I've got a son who's probably going to be short like his mother. And so you're saying basketball shouldn't be something I should push.
Yeah, that's the only activity. I'm not at all for only activities for any of the young kids. Even in junior high, I would really like a variety. Now, I like the idea of specializing in 1, 2, 3 sports for kids, just as I like specializing in some kind of literature or music and one instrument. Because I like the pursuit of excellence. But no, I want a cross-section. But what you can help do is to discourage them in some area that they just have their heart set on because their uncle played it. And then they don't want any other kinds of sports. And it's tough in small towns because everything is group and it's baseball because that's the easiest road to hold.
I'm just going to make a comment the fact that when I was in school, it was taught as physical education, and it was, you know, something you did, and it didn't work. And you went out and you did jumping jacks and push-ups and some of those things. But it was all the wrong philosophy, and it was never fun, it was never play. It was something to keep your body in shape.
That right, and that's our fault.
And I think that now kids, at least by exposing them to all of these things, they don't like something, why then it would be worth it. They should be able to find something that they can say is play, is fun, and that they are not even aware of the fact that they're spending a lot of energy.
All right. And that's one of the reasons that I don't emphasize exercise, or that the only reason for exercise is for fitness. Because we know what happens in the whole smoking world. Half the world is still smoking, in spite of that it's detrimental to their health. So if you use only fitness as a reason for little kids to exercise, you know, it's really not going to do it. And it's about time to go, but my final thought is on eating yourselves to death before we leave.
Right, right.
the input of food has to be less than the output of energy or you're going to gain weight. And if you're a woman over 40, even less input of food and more output of energy because of metabolism of the body. The female has a greater excuse than the male in terms of obesity. But it still is an issue for all of us because all you need to do is carry 25 extra pounds on your backs up the mountain. Any of you had an overnight or done the carrying? What happens in terms of your body feeling with that? Do you feel different than 25 pounds lighter? You take it off and everything seems swell. Well, remember that when you put on 10 to 25 pounds. You're asking your legs, your cardiovascular system to take that upon themselves as a burden. And so careful eating habits and diet is one of the primary kinds of considerations in holistic living. I say as I stash away a six-pack of Coca-Cola as part of my problem. But remember the input and the output. Also, you learn from hiking in the mountains that you can eat 4,000 calories per day and still lose weight. If you really want a nice, vigorous hike, or you really want to eat up the mountain, or any kinds of exercise. And I guess my final thought, since most of you know all about that eating habit, would deal with thinking about vigorous walking as opposed to jogging if you're having any difficulty at all with legs, back, or feeling any of the pressure of the bounce on jogging. That we're finding, particularly with women and older men, that jogging may be doing as much harm as good. It will increase your cardiovascular, but that it may be affecting the body, again, the shin splints, and the difficulties with the back. And again, maybe because we didn't exercise as children as much. And so a good 3-mile vigorous walk may be more beneficial, or one of these new little tramps. So, ultimately, then, what we want to do with our lives is to eat better, to exercise more, to play more, to have more leisure, and to equalize the amount of play, sport, games, athletics that we are going to give for both boys and for girls, and that all of us are going to make it a way of life. That is all.